It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer.
My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me tonight, Ed Jordanic, as always. And from NDNation.com, I'm Mike Coffey. Ed, I'm going to start with you. So when we did the show last week, you weren't available, but I predicted 40-17 Notre Dame. But all of a sudden, the weather reports came out on Thursday, and I started getting cold feet. Coffey didn't waver; he was pretty much solid that even in spite of that, we were going to win. But I don't know. I got a little nervous. I was like, "Oh my God, we got a replay of Michigan here." But going into the game, what were your thoughts on where you saw this Notre Dame team and what you thought the ultimate?
Yeah, no, I felt pretty comfortable. I don't want to. Hindsight's 20/20, but I thought it was at least a couple touchdowns. Notre Dame was a couple touchdowns better than Stanford. Both because of the way we'd been playing and also just because of the deficiencies that were pretty clear, for Stanford this year. But I'll tell you, those Michigan scars run deep and they're going to be with us for a long time. It's like just as soon as we're, sort of finally putting the Alabama thrashing in 2012 behind us, another game crops up that will stay with us and stick in our craw for years and years. So I'm sure, the first time anybody heard there might be a little bit of drizzle in Palo Alto, it was like, oh, we may not even get a first down.
Exactly.
So I get that.
And I don't know. I mean, I'm guilty of that. I'll be first and foremost to admit I was guilty of it. I just thought that we really struggled in that Michigan game, and I want to put the onus on the weather only because of the type of the offense that we run. But Coffey, I don't know. I mean, I think you have to evaluate this team, and the one thing you can say is, in spite of the Michigan game, because I do think that's a little bit of an outlier, and I don't know, it's easy. I'm a Notre Dame fan, right? So I'm going to say that. But I got to give a lot of credit to the mental toughness of this Notre Dame team for 2019, because it was, you got to overcome all this stuff. And in a lot of games, from a mental toughness standpoint, they actually did outside of the Michigan game. But even then, I mean, I think there's an argument there. In the third quarter, it was 17-7, and we played horrible. We had no business being in that game, and yet in the third quarter, it was 17-7, and, we're kicking off, and there's a chance.
Well, true. I think the team definitely showed the kind of fortitude you want to see. I mean, being down 17-7 and kicking back to Stanford to get the ball again, watching the game, there was a part of me at that point was like, is this going to be another Michigan? Because in past years, this would be the point where
was Mike Brammer talking about 17-7 in the Michigan game or 17-7 this past Saturday? Because it was...
No, I was talking 17-7 in the Michigan game where we still had a choice. But, I mean, to Coffey's point, we were down 17-7, and so I was thinking the same thing. I was a little nervous at that point, like, oh my God, the weather is going to come into play here.
Well, and one can argue that up until the blocked punt, that game was unfolding the exact same way Michigan did almost. I mean, our opening drive looked great, and then all of a sudden, as has been happening a lot this season, the offense got into one of its funks and just not being able to move the sticks and giving the ball back to Stanford. And fortunately, after Stanford, after that goal line stand, I think the defense was fired up and they played much, much better through the rest of the game. And the punt block, I think, energized everybody. And that was, I think, the psychological boost that the team needed to get past what had and not repeat what had happened at Michigan, which is certainly good to see, but I really get nervous, depending on the vagueness of things like blocked punts that don't happen all that much.
Yeah, Ed, I think, let's just say this. One of the things that I was kind of I'm going to be honest, pleasantly surprised, is that Notre Dame came out, and I thought to myself, okay, you're in a difficult situation with the weather and all that, and especially knowing what we knew with Michigan, let's just run the ball aft tackle and run over these guys, right? Let's just do power football. Let's run over these guys. But that's not what Stanford was giving us. And I want to say that Notre Dame threw it the first six plays from scrimmage. I don't know for sure, but I think that was the case. And, that's a sign to me that the coaching staff was convinced that, hey, we know what they're giving us. We're going to take it. We're going to execute. And we're going to do what we think we need to do in order to win the football game. And they were committed to it.
Well,
that's what they did.
I guess. But the puzzliness is that however many, the first six or the first 12 or however many first 10 passes, none of them were targeted to Chase Claypool. I don't know. I mean, it was a really strange game for the first 21 minutes or whatever it was, or more than that, first 30 or first 25 minutes, or and I just, listen, I think we all would have taken 10-2 at the beginning of the year. I don't think any of us like the way that the 10-2 was constructed because, we kind of had a drive to win the game against Georgia and didn't execute very well, and then we didn't show up for Michigan. But there were a lot of bright spots to the season. I think probably if we want to sort of critique things, you brought it up, Mike. I mean, we just, have a very, I guess the charitable word would be inconsistent offensive line play. Obviously, we know about the false starts, some penalties at bad times, but just the inability to get tough yardage. Not all on the backs of the offensive line. Running backs bear some of the responsibility too. But I think we kept Ian Book upright a good part for most of the year. But also there were plenty of days where we were very fortunate that he has pretty good legs, even in games against lesser opponents. And we did not, with a couple of exceptions, have real consistency running the ball between the tackles. We didn't really have a running back to get to the edge. So I don't know. If I had to look at one key part of this team that really has to improve dramatically, and I hesitate to use that word dramatically, but I think they really have to improve dramatically next year to compete for the playoff, and that's the offensive line. Todd Light gets a lot of grief for recruiting, but I thought the defensive backfield, I thought he and Joseph did a good job, and they'll probably have a bigger challenge next year because of the guys they're losing. But I think they're really good, solid coaches. Recruiting's another issue that can be addressed separately. But the offensive line, especially with everybody coming back, they have to play better. They just have to be more consistent, and they have to be able to drive people off the ball. To me, they're still just not in sync with the offensive scheme, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Coffee, and I think it's a fair point. I mean, if you really are paying attention to the game as it unfolds, you really, I mean, to be honest, you got to scratch your head a little bit with the kind of offensive penalties that we suffered at critical times, especially with the false starts. Eichenberg, I know, is, flagged several times. I don't want to single him out, but a lot of that, you got to scratch your head and question, okay, what's going on from a coaching philosophy as to, okay, how do we address this? I mean, I know Alabama had to address this after the Auburn game, but I just think that there's something to be said for that I don't know that that's just some, weird coincidence that we just got unlucky. I don't believe in that kind of stuff. I mean, I think there's something, you just have to ask yourself, okay, from a coaching philosophy, what could we have done different to prevent these kind of, implosions that I really felt in really key moments of a lot of games, especially the Georgia game. I mean, if you go back and look at that game, there are some major, major key penalties that went against us that are what I call, in tennis unforced errors. I mean, they just didn't need to happen.
No, absolutely. And I think part of the issue is, I think if you have to look at it as the overall, the issue I see with the offensive line is a lack of focus. I don't necessarily want to use the word discipline. That may not be the right word, but it just seems to be a wavering lack of attention. When you have guys routinely forgetting the snap count and moving too early, that's a lack of attention. When you have guys just not getting to their blocks, and talented guys who are just like whiffing, letting guys come in unblocked, like going to the wrong place, that's a lack of attention. And I completely agree with Ed that that offensive line is a major component that must be better going forward. I mean, that's a definite must. It's got to happen. But I also wonder if is a pass-first offense good when we recruit at the skill positions the way we do? I think if you're going to have an offense that uses the pass to set up the run, you have to be close to the elite level at quarterback and at wide receiver. And when the broken play seems to be a not insignificant part of your arsenal, that's you're just begging for trouble. I mean, as you said, it was good this year that we had Ian Book was so good with his feet, and he was able to make something out of bad plays in certain situations, but you're not always going to have that, especially at Notre Dame. So you have to have an offensive philosophy that shows you have a plan. You're running plays in the first quarter to set up stuff in the third quarter, or you're finding, probing your opponent's weaknesses, trying to see what works. It seems like we just continually see this square peg trying to be driven into a round hole with a larger and larger hammer to force it to fit, and I think Notre Dame would be much better served by playing to its strengths and making sure that the offensive line, which makes any offense go, plays with a lot more discipline and a lot more focus.
Yeah. Ed, you know, so this is an interesting argument because I think there's some evidence behind this to, you know, we have to process this. I'm going to have to look into this, but I'm pretty sure, and I'll double check
this. They did, yep.
That Notre Dame set the points per game record this year.
They did, yep.
And so that being the case,
yeah,
it's really hard to argue that Chip Long didn't do a really good job. Because I mean, how do you rectify that? You can look at it and you say, all right,
look
well,
at who we played.
Yeah, I mean, there's some of. I mean, I agree with that. I mean, well, we put up 66 on New Mexico, but
see,
in spite of that,
the difference
take that
to me.
Out,
I mean,
let's
you know,
take that out
Mike's
out
right.
There.
Mike Coffey's right.
Up
I mean,
a hell of a
you
lot
know,
of points.
14 against Michigan. Basically, that those scores, you know, the last touchdown was in garbage time. You know, 17 against Georgia. You know, a struggle against Virginia Tech, you know, the issues there is that if you look around the country and you see, you know, Alabama did lose Saturday, but, you know, they scored 40-some points in a loss. You know, when Clemson, when they lost to Clemson last year, they scored 40-some points. You know, if anybody's going to beat Ohio State, they're going to beat them 45-44. If anybody's going to beat, you know, those sort of the teams above us basically can score on anybody and kind of lose in a shootout. I mean, even LSU, what was the final score of the LSU-Alabama game? I can't remember. But it was a relatively high-scoring affair, wasn't it? I mean, yeah. So college football has changed. You know, I don't know if we're going to see,
yeah, definitely was
you know,
there,
a
yeah.
dominant defense again like that. You know, remember when LSU played Alabama, you know, kind of the first of their two meetings, wasn't it like 7-6 or 13-6, and their second one was like, you know, 10-3 or some crazy stuff like that. I'm not sure we're going to revisit those days. We may well, but I think that's why kind of Clark Lee knows what he's doing. I mean, you notice that each game he sort of is, you know, we're kind of slow to get going on defense, but he gets things figured out. And most games, the second half, we're a brick wall, just like we were Saturday for Stanford. You saw those statistics, how anemic Stanford was in the second half against our defense. So I think we are you know, you have to really make the most of your possessions in college football today. You almost have to get points against, you know, you got to get more points than you've ever had to against the elite teams, no matter how good your defense is. We're, you know, whether it's skill position players, whether it's offensive line consistency and efficiency, whether it's quarterback play, you know, all those things need to be improved for Notre Dame to get to the promised land.
No, absolutely, and I think one other thing thing to keep in mind is, yeah, the Notre Dame definitely scored a lot of points, but the defense that we've been very rightfully lauding, I think they're, what, third in the nation in takeaways? I mean, how many turnovers has the defense forced? How much easier is it to score points when you've got a short field or when the defense itself is scoring? I don't have the stats to say how many defensive points we scored, but I would love to see the stat of what percentage of Notre Dame points were scored on drives of 50 yards or more, because that's, I think, the shows, that's evidence of an offense that's really clicking, of an offense that can run long, time-consuming drives. And we've seen those a couple times this year, which I was very glad to see, but it wasn't consistent. There wasn't, if we got the ball in the 20, you weren't looking to say, okay, this is going to be a nice long drive because we can get some high level plays that can really help us take some clock off and things like that. So I'd really love to see the stats on what effect
the turnover margin of the defense had on
Notre Dame's ability to
score points. We had a 1 yard drive and then they muffed a punt, right? Which was another short drive. So that's 21 points right there. And it's, you know, it's 24-24 without those 21 points. So, you know, there's an example for you. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you think, Coffee, what, in your mind, as you look at this, I mean, I think Clark Lee is an obvious keeper.
Oh, God,
there's no doubt. There's no argument whatsoever to say that. So, outside of Clark Lee, yeah, like, I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are.
My position, and I put this on Twitter right after the game, I think there are three things I would like to see happen. I would like to see Chip Long replaced. I would like his replacement to come from outside the staff, and I would like his replacement to have carte blanche to either retain or replace offensive assistants. I think Lance, I can't believe I can't remember his last name, the running backs coach, I like what he's done. I don't know about Tom Rees. I obviously support him as him being an alumnus. I think if he's really going to cut his teeth, he might benefit from being outside the Notre Dame bubble, trying to get some experiences in a broader range of places if he wants to advance. And then outside of that, I mean, as you said, Clark Lee has been absolutely fantastic. I mean, one of the best defensive coordinators we've seen at Notre Dame, I think, going back to, probably the Holtz teams, because it's great to go in and know that your defense is going to show up, which other than the second half of the Michigan game when I'm convinced they were just completely gassed and beaten up and freezing cold and just wanted to be out of there, which I can definitely imagine I probably would have been the same way, they have answered the bell in every game. As you said, Mike, they've been lights out in every second half. If they can find a way to keep lay around, that'd be awesome. You know, I completely understand if he feels like he needs to advance in his coaching career, but it better not come down to, well, Notre Dame's not willing to pay me enough money, and no lateral moves here. If he leaves for a promotion, fine. Otherwise, I better not see him on any other sideline next September.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I think he's the keeper of all of them, that's for sure. It's going to be interesting to see what happens because we don't know the dynamic of what's really going on behind the scenes amongst the coaching staff. You know, I think you got to give Brian Kelly some credit here from the standpoint of where he's been since 2016. 2017, they finished 14th. 2018, they were obviously top five. 2019, who knows? I mean, we probably are going to get Oklahoma State in in the Champs Bowl, but you know, you win that ball game, you're in the top 10. That's 3 years in a row where you're hanging around the top 10. I don't see how you argue that, you know, in light of the way college football is today. That's a hell of an accomplishment, especially from where he was in 2016. But you know, I do think that there's some interesting dynamics there in terms of, you know, I got to believe that Brian Kelly's saying, okay, how do I win a national championship here? And if I do, what do I need to do in terms of the coaching staff in order to give me that opportunity to do that? So that is going to definitely be an interesting dynamic moving into the, you know, bowl game here in the next couple of weeks in terms of what he thinks he needs to do with that regard, and you know, whether any changes come of it or whatever. I mean, I do believe that Brian Kelly's convinced and committed to the fact that he wants to win a national championship. Easier said than done. And I do think that because of the nature we're in, it's hard, you know, it's weird. It would be interesting to go back to that argument of, would Holtz have benefited from the playoff? Because, you know, maybe 1991 or even 1989, he might have gotten in the playoffs and then maybe pulled it off and won it because he got in there. I don't know. It's interesting. I think it's a totally different dynamic, Ed, in terms of where we're at with the college football playoffs.
Notre Dame, you've got to run the table nowadays to win a ensure national your championship. Seat in the playoff. That's just sort of the. And I think you are in the playoff if you go 12-0. If you're Notre Dame, so you know next year they'll probably be favored in every game except Clemson, and maybe even Clemson home in November. You know, who knows what kind of shape Clemson is in, you know, this time next year, how their season ends. Obviously, they've sort of turned on the afterburners after getting sort of disrespected in the middle of the season in terms of some rankings and stuff. But, you know, I fully expect them to win the ACC championship game easily and sort of, you know, play with a lot of swagger and defend their national championship, you know, with a lot of energy, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them win it again. They're just as talented as, I mean, I think Ohio State, LSU, Clemson, those are all really, really talented football teams. I think Clemson has an edge because it has a coach that's been there and done that, both lost and now won in the playoffs. And, you know, I think that's probably you know, he's very comfortable in his own skin. Ryan Day sort of probably maybe has the most talented team, but he's the least experienced. And Ogeron has a hell of a quarterback, which gives him a little bit of an edge over the other guys. I think Burrow is probably better than Fields or Lawrence at this point. I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting. I can't see how one of those three teams isn't the national champion. And it's very possible that one of them gets a little bit on a hot streak and wins both its semifinal game and final game, you know, by 2-3 touchdowns over their opponents. You know, you could just kind of sort of see that. That's how talented they are. But as far as Notre Dame goes, you know, I don't, you know, you're going to kind of, what else does Brian Kelly have to do? I mean, in terms of, you know, of course he's got a, you know, national championship is the brass ring. You know, whether he's got 2, 3, 4 years left, how much longer he wants to coach. Looks like he's going to retire from Notre Dame. I think that seems to be his plan. I think if he's serious about it, we're going to find out pretty quickly in the off season, in terms of staff changes that he makes. Because he definitely has some underperforming areas, and if he chooses to address them aggressively, we're going to know he's going for it.
I think, yep. That's exactly right. I think it'll be a telltale sign of where he stands in terms of what he wants to accomplish before he exits. Hey, really quick, Coffee. I'm just curious. If Notre Dame had beaten Michigan, what do you think their chances would have been of getting in right now to the playoffs?
I'm not sure. I think part of the issue is the way the playoffs rotate. This is a bad year for Notre Dame anyway, because two of the bowls that aren't totally locked, because the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl are completely contractually locked in. They're always going to be Big Ten against Pac-10 or Pac-12, and it's going to be SEC against Big 12. So So Notre Dame, unless it's a playoff, Notre Dame cannot go to those bowls. And unfortunately, both of those bowls are not hosting the playoffs this year. So I think I read an article that Notre Dame really was probably limited to two slots, and I'm not sure 11-1 with the loss to Georgia would necessarily have gotten it. I think Notre Dame would have ended up, we'd probably, because the loss was so early, early losses can be recovered from. I think Georgia would still be ahead of us, but Notre Dame would be sitting there. I think Notre Dame would be sitting where Utah is, like right around at 5, maybe 6, and they would be in the mix with Utah and Oklahoma. And I think this year, though, because of the lack of open slots, I think it was going to be really, really tough to get to the New York Six.
I don't know,
year anyway, and
I kind of think about it. I think it didn't help get their doors blown up in Michigan. I think it would have taken Georgia just blowing out LSU this weekend, and then you would have had sort of a clear SEC champ, you would have had a clear Big Ten champ, you would have had a clear ACC champ, and then you would have had a wild card. And I think of the one-loss teams, Notre Dame would have had the best loss, if that makes any sense, of the one-loss teams. So that might have been the way they would have gotten in. I'm not saying that would have been a deadbolt lock.
Yeah, that
makes
sense.
That, I think, would have been their path, is if everything went as it's gone, except Georgia, didn't lose to South Carolina and knocked the crap out of LSU in the SEC championship game.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think, unfortunately, it is. I really feel like Notre Dame is in that weird dilemma where they almost have to go undefeated in order to get in just to secure their spot. And I think it just, because they're independent, that's the world that they live in. And, in terms of having that loss against Georgia, like you say, it would have to, Georgia would have had to absolutely blown them out. And then that gives you the argument that, okay, wait a minute, you know, Notre Dame was within a touchdown of beating them. And then there's a huge argument of, all right, you know, you're still
in
this dilemma.
And I may be in the minority, but I'd rather
not
go undefeated.
And unfortunately, I think that's the case. And
it's a close call and play in a Big Six bowl game against a cool opponent than join a conference. A lot of people wouldn't. A lot of people wouldn't.
Oh, I'll take that all day long. Just to say that we're not
actually, Brian, you bring up a good point. I mean, what happens if that does go down this week? Let's say Georgia completely confounds everybody and beats LSU by 4 touchdowns. And so now everyone's saying, well, that's where the South Carolina game is a fluke. But then do people turn around and look at Notre Dame and say, okay, Notre Dame played these guys within a touchdown. As you said, yeah, they had a bad day. They had a bad day at Michigan, but hey, as you said, there's an established hierarchy here. So maybe we can, I mean, who knows? If that does happen, might we see Notre Dame jump up a bunch of points and be reconsidered by the committee? I mean, personally, I don't think it'll happen, but it's not outside the realm of possibility.
Well, I think the cool thing would be if Notre Dame does go ahead and play Oklahoma State, which looks to be the case. I mean, it's pointing that direction, but you know, if Notre Dame wins that bowl game, I mean, that's a hell of a season, 10-11-2 with the win over them, who gave Oklahoma a hell of a game last weekend. It's hard to argue that we didn't have a successful 2019 season in light of all that.
And we kept them under wraps pretty good.
It definitely would. Yep, exactly. Yeah, for sure. All right, well, we'll do a pregame show before that, so we'll leave it here. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Andrew Danik, Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.